Dr. William Luther Pierce, the year 2000. The Evil Among Us.
Hello. Today I have some new information I want to share with you. It is information on a subject I've discussed with you more than once in the past, namely the Jewish trade in white female slaves. The reason this new information is noteworthy is that it comes directly from the horse's mouth, so to speak. It is from the June 16th issue of the Jerusalem Post, actually the Saturday supplement to the Jerusalem Post. In Israel, of course, they have Saturday supplements instead of Sunday supplements. The Jerusalem Post's documentary article on Israel's trade in white slaves, published just 2 weeks ago, is astoundingly frank and straightforward. And in today's broadcast, I will read to you directly from the article. You know, one of the biggest problems facing me or anyone else trying to inform the public in a way which contradicts the party line propagated by the television networks is credibility. I tell the average citizen something like, in Israel, it is legal to buy and sell slaves so long as they aren't Jews. The slave trade is big business in Israel, and it's legal. The average citizen's response to this statement is, I don't believe it. That can't be true. Everyone knows that Jews are liberals and are big supporters of human rights. They would never tolerate such a thing as the buying and selling of human beings in their own country. Don't you ever watch television? If you did, you'd know that Jews just aren't like that. That reminds me of the refrain from a hymn I used to sing in Sunday school when I was a child. It went something like this. This I know, for the Bible tells me so. Today, of course, television has replaced the Bible as the source of all truth for the great mass of people, certainly for everyone who is incapable of looking at the world around him and reaching his own conclusions based on the evidence. Actually, I believe that no amount of evidence will change the mind of a true believer in the PV religion any more than it will change the mind of a Bible believer. Get yourself a copy of the Jerusalem Post, and it's available in the New York Public Library and in a number of other larger libraries around the country, and show it to a true believer. And he'll still tell you that he doesn't believe it. He'll tell you it's a forgery. It can't be true because it doesn't agree with what he's seen and heard from television. Anyway, here goes. I quote from the June 16th issue of the Jerusalem Post. Every year, hundreds of women and an unknown number of girls under the age of 18 are bought, sold, drugged, imprisoned, and forced to work as prostitutes in Israel's thriving sex industry. In countries such as Russia, Ukraine, Latvia, and Hungary, traffickers prey on desperate women. Facing poverty, the women are lured to Israel with the promise that they will make fabulous salaries working as teachers or caregivers. Here I will interject two comments of my own. First, the reason that so many young women in Eastern Europe are facing poverty and are desperate is that the countries in which they live were bled dry by half a century of Jewish communism. In the case of Russia and Ukraine, of course, it was nearly three-quarters of a century. In the case of Hungary and Latvia, it was the United States government which turned these formerly free countries over to the communists at the end of the Second World War to do with as they pleased. Do you remember what started the Second World War? Initially, it was just a territorial dispute between Germany and Poland. The Germans wanted back the German territory, which had been taken away from Germany and given to Poland at the end of the First World War. But when the Germans, under Hitler, began taking back that territory in September 1939, Britain and France declared war on Germany, ostensibly to protect the freedom of Poland. The Germans had done nothing against Britain and France and wanted very much to remain at peace with those countries. But the politicians of Britain and France had other considerations. The fact that the Soviet Union also invaded Poland in September 1939 was all right with Britain and France. They didn't declare war on the Soviet Union because the Soviet Union was for all practical purposes under Jewish rule. They did declare war on Germany because Germany under Hitler had broken loose from the grip of the Jews and had freed the German media and German education and German finance and German politics and German culture from Jewish influence and was in the process of kicking all of the Jews out of Germany. That was the reason for the Second World War, not Polish freedom or Polish territorial integrity. That was the reason why, when in April 1943, the German army discovered the mass graves of some of the 25,000 Polish officers and intellectuals murdered by Jewish communists and invited the International Red Cross and journalists from many nations to view the evidence. The controlled media in Britain and the United States ignored the evidence and blamed the atrocity on the Germans. That was the reason why, at the end of the war, those countries which had gone to war ostensibly to ensure the freedom of Poland agreed to turn Poland and Latvia and Hungary and the rest of Eastern Europe over to the communist butchers who had carried out the massacre of the elite of the Polish nation. Of course, the communists economically drained and ruined all of these countries. And these communists were Jews, which is to say, the Jews were the prime movers in the communist regimes imposed on those countries after the war, and also were the primary beneficiaries of the regimes. In Hungary, for example, there was the regime of the communist Jew Matyas Rákosi, followed by another communist Jew, Ernő Gheru. In Romania, the communist Jewess Anna Pauker ruled the country as first secretary of the Central Committee. In Poland, the minister for state control was the communist Jew Roman Dmowski. In Czechoslovakia, the secretary general of the Communist Party was the communist Jew Rudolf Slansky. In Yugoslavia, while Tito held the spotlight, the communist Jew Moshe Piatti was the chairman of the National Assembly and president of Serbia. And so it went. And this, in a Europe whose Jews supposedly had all been holocausted by Hitler. There were tens of millions of Hungarians and Poles and Latvians and Serbs and other Eastern Europeans under the yoke of communism who were wishing that Hitler had actually holocausted the Jews. These communist Jews were so hated by the Eastern Europeans they ruled and exploited that there was constant turmoil. And after the Hungarian uprising in 1956, many of the leading communist Jews were replaced by Gentile frontmen while the Jews continued to exploit the people from behind the scenes. Even as the communist regimes of Eastern Europe began collapsing during the last 15 years or so and their economies were privatized, Jews continued to plunder the people among whom they lived, using money from their brethren abroad and collusion with their corrupt kinsmen still in the various governments. They managed to buy up the most valuable factories, mines, and other national resources at fire sale prices and then milk them for all they were worth. I apologize for the long digression, but I wanted to make it clear just why so many of our young women in Eastern Europe are living in poverty today and are desperate to improve their prospects, making them easy prey for Jewish slave dealers. It is the Jews who, more than anyone else, are responsible for the impoverishment of Eastern Europe. The Jews, beginning with Karl Marx, invented communism, and then they used it to exploit the Gentiles among whom they lived. My second comment is that the women lured and entrapped by Jewish slave dealers are made doubly easy prey because they never have been warned to beware of Jews. And the reason they never have been warned is that the Jewish communists of every regime in Eastern Europe enacted legislation making it illegal to do so. To warn a young woman never to trust a Jew, to tell a young woman what Jews are like and what they do is hate speech. And hate speech is a penal offense in every country of Eastern Europe. Jews may not be criticized. It is illegal to tell the truth about them. And of course, the Jews and their bot politicians and their feminist and homosexual and minority allies are pushing hard for similar laws against so-called hate speech in the United States. Let's return to the June 16th issue of the Jerusalem Post, where I read to you how financially desperate Eastern European girls are lured to Israel with the promise of big salaries as secretaries or teachers or caregivers. The article continues, "But when they come to Israel, their passports and travel papers are taken away in order to prevent them from leaving. They are raped and beaten. Traffic women are treated as objects, as commodities to be bought and sold by pimps for thousands of dollars or held in debt bondage, forced to work to pay off large sums of money. Their owners imprison them in locked houses or apartments with barred windows. They can rarely leave the apartment and are prevented from going out unaccompanied. They are frequently abused, especially if they refuse to have sex with a customer or try to escape. In brothels, massage parlors, and sex clubs throughout the country, these women slaves are subjected to violence, degradation, and terror. According to a report released last month by Amnesty International entitled The Trafficking of Women to Israel, the country is rapidly becoming a major destination for sex trafficking and slavery." Now, I should tell you that I am skipping around in this long article and reading you just bits and pieces. It is full of heartrending stories about individual female slaves, and there's not time to read all of them to you. One of the stories is about Anna, a 31-year-old unemployed physics teacher from St. Petersburg. She was lured to Israel by a Jew who promised her good working conditions and $1,000 a month, which was 20 times what her salary had been in Russia. Now, I'll read to you exactly what the Jerusalem Post says about Anna. "Anna arrived here in October 1998 on a tourist visa. She was met at the airport and taken to an apartment and locked up with six other women from Eastern Europe. She was auctioned twice and finally bought for $10,000. Taken to Haifa, she was held in captivity with two other women. The apartment in which she lived had bars on the windows," etc. The article goes on to say that the Jew who had bought Anna repeatedly reminded her that he knew where her family lived in St. Petersburg and that he would harm them if she escaped or failed to obey his orders. Anna was not able to escape, but she finally was deported back to Russia by Israeli immigration authorities because her tourist visa had expired. Her former owner remains at liberty, and Anna remains in terror that he will one day show up again at her residence in St. Petersburg. Then there is the story of a young woman from Belarus, from White Russia. Again, I read the exact words of the Jerusalem Post. Tatiana, not her real name, had been promised a job working as a cleaner in a hotel in Eilat. She was told the job would pay enough to support her mother and her six-year-old son. In Eilat, a man pretending to be from the hotel where she thought she was going to be employed took her to a brothel where she was forced to work as a prostitute. She was told that she would have to repay her sale price and travel costs. She tried unsuccessfully to escape and was finally freed after a police raid. She was held in Nevekirsa. 3 days after her arrest, Tatiana found an anonymous note on her prison bunk threatening to kill her and punish her family if she spoke out about what had happened to her. She petitioned the chief of police but was told that the Israel police cannot guarantee anyone's safety abroad. She testified in June 1999 and was deported later that month. Her fate is not known. A police spokesman refused to comment on the case. End of Tatiana's story. Now listen very carefully, because we are getting to the real meat of this article. I will read you exactly what the Jerusalem Post says about the role of the Israeli government and Israeli law in this horrifying business. I quote, "In Israel, prostitution is not illegal, nor is there legislation against trafficking or slavery, though there is a law forbidding taking people out of the country by force. Police officials complain that in the absence of legislation, their options are limited." Now, I'm skipping to another paragraph, and again I quote, "According to the statistics provided by the Israel police, in 1997, between 500 and 600 police files were opened under Article 10 of the Penal Code, which covers prostitution and obscenity offenses. An unknown additional number of cases against traffickers and pimps were also opened under other sections of the Penal Code for crimes such as assault, kidnapping, and unlawful possession of passports. And though the police have opened more than 1,100 files during the past 3 years, only 126 cases against men involved in trafficking have actually been brought to court. During the same period, more than 1,200 women have been deported from Israel. According to sociologist Esther Herzog, director of SHIN, the Movement for Equal Representation for Women, in 1999, the police arrested more than 400 women, but only 28 pimps. And even these minuscule numbers, she says, are probably inflated. Since there is no law here against trafficking in human beings or slave trading, it is impossible to know how many of the above cases were related to trafficking and how many were connected to prostitution-related offenses such as pimping or operating a brothel." End of quote. I hope that you absorbed what I just read. There is no law in Israel against trafficking in human beings or slave trading. And consequently, there is a flourishing trade in white slaves in Israel today. I didn't write that, and it's not from the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. It was written by two female Israeli journalists and published 2 weeks ago in a prominent Jewish newspaper in Jerusalem. You might wonder why such devastating information was published by a Jewish newspaper. There are a couple of reasons. First, the same feminism which the Jews push so enthusiastically in America has cropped up in Israel too. Jewish women always have resented the greater sexual attractiveness which Gentile women have for Jewish men. After all, there's not much a Jewess can do about her face or her personality. Too many Jewesses look like Anna Paquin or Madeleine Albright and swear like Madeleine Albright. These Russian and Ukrainian girls being forced into prostitution in Israel not only are better looking, but they are much softer and more feminine than Israeli women. I believe that there is no question but that Israeli Jewesses would like to see them out of Israel. They don't like the sexual competition, and as organized feminists, they have enough muscle to be able to express their views in Israel's mass media. That's one reason this article appeared in the Jerusalem Post. The other reason is that the Jews who publish the Jerusalem Post understand that there's no real danger that the Jews will be called to account for their slave trafficking. They understand that with their control of the mass media everywhere in the Gentile world, they can say whatever they want among themselves with little risk that the soccer moms or couch potatoes of America will ever hear about it. And if they do happen to hear about it, they won't believe it. And even if they do believe it, they're too demoralized and spineless to do anything about it. Want to try an experiment? Get yourself a Xeroxed copy of the June 16th Jerusalem Post article from a library. If that issue has mysteriously disappeared by the time you get to the library, send me $25 for my time and trouble, and I'll Xerox my copy of the article and mail it to you. Take your copy of the article to the editor of your local newspaper. Send a copy to your congressman. Have your kid take it to his high school social studies teacher for class discussion. If you're a university student enrolled in a class in international relations or ethics or law or any subject relevant to this article, take it to your professor and ask him what he thinks about it. I'll guarantee you, not one of these people will appreciate having this matter brought to his attention. The newspaper editor and the congressman will already know about it, but they won't want to talk about it. The high school social studies teacher would prefer that your kid bring a case of live hand grenades to class for discussion. And the university professor will have visions of his chances for tenure evaporating if he can't get you to shut up and go away quickly. And as I said at the beginning of this program, the average lemming will find the whole issue unreal because he didn't see it on TV. You won't even be able to embarrass a Jew with it. He'll just brazenly deny it and accuse you of anti-Semitism. That, unfortunately, is the state of public and private morale in America today. That's why our civilization is going down the tubes. That's why Timothy McVeigh blew up the federal building in Oklahoma City. It was the only way he knew to get people to look up from their ball games for a minute and pay attention to what's happening to their world. So, why do I bother? I bother because between the ball game fans at one end and the corrupt politicians and corrupt Christian preachers and corrupt newspaper editors at the other end, there is an intelligent and responsible 2% or so of the population, a moral 2%, capable of understanding and caring about what the Jews are doing to our world and to our people. And these Russian and Latvian and Hungarian girls lured to Israel and forced into a life of slavery and degradation are our people. Among the moral 2% of the U.S. population, there are people who care as much as I do about the fact that their government sends billions of dollars a year to prop up a regime which permits beautiful young white girls to be stripped, raped, beaten, put up on an auction block, and sold to whichever leering, swarthy, hook-nosed kike makes the highest bid. We fight wars to protect that regime from its Arab neighbors. We permit the kinsmen of those who make up that regime to control our mass media of news and entertainment. We condemn the Germans for trying to free themselves from such control. There are Americans who care about these things as much as I do. And by God, we intend to do something about these things, even if we have to do it Timothy McVeigh's way. I hope it doesn't come to that. But we will break the grip of these Jews and their collaborators on our society. Thanks for being with me again today.